Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, let's begin this segment with a question. Is your midlife marriage or romantic relationship based upon true love? Our next guest, relationship expert Sky Blossoms, contends that much of what we Americans think is love really isn't. Furthermore, she argues that much of what we believe makes relationships work not only isn't true, it could actually cause damage and even break up. The good news is Sky promises to help you discover the real essence of love and the keys to a lasting and blissful relationship. And Sky Blossoms is a one-on-one relationship coach and a noted public speaker. She's author of the brand-new book, Best Thing Ever, Escape Disappointment and Drama, and Let True Love Into Your Life. She was a recurring guest on CBS Radio and also has appeared on numerous other radio and TV programs. And she has an inspirational personal story. She was born and grew up in a place a lot of us are talking about these days, Ukraine. Came to the U.S. on her own, learned our language and culture, and after 13 years became a citizen. And I'm always amazed and impressed by people that did that. And hello, Sky, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, let's begin by exposing a few of the common myths that Americans hold about love. First of all, when your spouse or romantic partner says, "I can't live without you," does it mean that he or she really loves you, or should you run for your life?
That's such a great question. Well, in my opinion, you should really take a closer look at where this is coming from, because we all have had, if we lived a while, we've all been through ups and downs in all kinds of relationships. Yeah. We've been in love, then we've been through breakup, and even if it seems like you cannot live without another person, it's never the case. Like, you've been in love before, and you survived. So it's never actually true, and I think statements like that are a form of manipulation, tricking you into a guilt trip subconsciously.
That's pretty true. I never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is, really. I can't live without you, so therefore you can't leave me, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so if you leave me, I'm going to be heartbroken, and you are responsible for that. And actually, we had, if I may share, a really funny episode. My husband and I were in the store, and I was trying something in the fitting room, and there was a music playing on the radio, and a popular song said, "You are responsible for how I feel." And we looked at each other, and we just cracked up laughing out loud, because this is the most ridiculous thing out there, and yet it's in a popular song, and people buy into this. How can somebody else be responsible for how you feel? It's never the case.
No, exactly. That's such a good point. Well, if your spouse or partner gets jealous, does this imply that he or she deeply cares for you, or is your spouse attempting to control you? And if you get jealous, does it mean you are in love, or does it mean you really reflect your insecurity? I like that question.
Yeah. Well, I have interviewed dozens of successful couples, and I've had plenty of my own personal experience, and I've coached many people. So I have wealth of not only studying but observation of what really works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And true, the essence of energy of love is akin to freedom. It's a free-flowing thing. It's like, think of that like a water in a river. It flows, it replenishes itself. It has certain container, which is the bank, but it's still somewhat flexible. Now, what we're trying to do in our society, we try to grab that water, lock it in a bottle of a relationship and a commitment, and then we hope that it's going to stay just alive as it was free-flowing, and it's never the case. After a while, it starts rottening from stagnation.
Yeah, that's true, because it's stuck in a little container.
Yeah, with commitment and with jealousy. What jealousy does, to me, it's always a sign of insecurity. Jealousy comes from the place, let me try to control you so I don't have to suffer losing you.
Yeah.
Versus taking responsibility of saying, okay, I'm going to be the best I can possibly be for myself and for our relationship and, you know, contribute that to our union. Now, if that works for you, fantastic. I'm giving it my best. If it doesn't, there is nothing more I can offer than what I've got. And if it doesn't work, I will respect your choices.
Yeah, I like the statement you make. Is it true that if you really love someone, you can't get hurt? That's a pretty tough thing to buy into.
Oh.
It kind of, you know, that flies in the face of all those good old country heartbreak songs and soap operas. But what do you mean by that? You can't get hurt if you really love someone.
Roy, thank you so much for asking that question. It just warms my heart. Well, my personal belief is that love is never a question. It's always there. That is the basis of life itself.
Yeah.
That is something that we're made of, essentially. So, and we either make a choice to open our hearts to love or to close off.
Yeah.
And we suffer only when within ourselves we believe our own made-up story, which presents valid, quote-unquote, valid arguments why we should stop loving a person. Right? So we close up our heart, and that's what creates suffering. Now, relationship is a choice which has to serve a purpose. And in my view, that purpose has to be the fullest expression for both partners, meaning living their best life possible.
Amen.
So if a relationship supports for both partners being the best they can possibly be, if it's inspiring, if it's fulfilling, if it's encouraging, then yes, it has the reason for being, and you know, both partners will grow to becoming more of who they are on a day-by-day basis. And of course, there are going to be challenges, but those challenges are turned into growth opportunities. Now, if a relationship is there, I'm holding on to you, you're holding on to me, so we don't have to feel lonely, then guess what? You're going to feel lonely within a relationship. And
good point.
Yeah, so to me, love is always there, and it doesn't have to mean marriage. It doesn't have to mean sharing a life path together. And in great cases, it is. So you just open your heart to everyone, essentially. And some people touch you in a very special way. And if you share the same values and you are a good match otherwise, then, and it supports your purpose, then by all means, you should be in a relationship. But if it doesn't, then, you know. So that to answer your question, if you really love someone, you cannot get hurt because you choose to love. You get hurt only when you choose not to love.
Oh, I see. Well, you declare that good relationships don't require hard work and sacrifice, and that couples should not have to work on their relationships at all. And that, to me, sounds too good to be true. Then how do you sustain and build up your marriage partnership over time if both of you aren't working at it? Does it just flow naturally, or how does that work?
Well, such a great question. In the way I view it, every relationship is a mirror, whether it's a relationship with your friend, with your coworker, with your sibling, with your parents, with your intimate partner. It's a mirror of your belief system, of your inner world, of how you perceive, of your self-image, and of the image of your partner.
Yeah.
So anytime there are challenges, that means that the perception that you hold within yourself is somewhat, you have resistances, you have unresolved traumas, you have some emotions that have not been expressed maybe from childhood. And if you try to work on a relationship and try to convince your partner do something else other than they're doing, you're not addressing the core issue, because your partner or the challenge that is coming up is merely a reflection of what's going on within yourself.
So
working on a relationship is like trying to fix a mirror if you don't like the reflection.
You don't put makeup on the mirror.
Exactly. Absolutely. So my invitation is to turn around, pardon, and look inside and see, huh, that's interesting. My partner reflects that to me. How did I inspire that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
What's within me that inspired this kind of response? And that is a supreme level of personal responsibility where you're not pointing a finger and saying, oh, hey, you didn't do this, this, and that, where you turn around and say, how did I create this in my life?
Yeah.
So, and the work on a relationship is never work on the union. It's the work on like purifying your own beingness and like shining the diamond, right, or polishing.
Yeah.
And also being really attuned to your partner and, of course, caringly and lovingly doing your best, again, your best, not your partner's best, doing your best in communication, in offering your love and support and care and expressing your feelings and so on and so forth. So, in my view, any work on relationship turns back into work on yourself.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to your book, Best Thing Ever. You promise within a transformational step-by-step guide to building a truly magical life partnership. And what is a sound initial step to a genuinely fulfilling relationship that will last? You have, how do you get started in that?
Well, beautiful. Thanks for asking that. Well, I would say that the first and foremost step is getting clear on your why. If any of you have been involved in a business world, you know that the first thing when you start a new venture, you ask yourself, what's my why? What's my purpose? Why do I want to do this? What's my passion? What am I called towards?
Yeah.
So in a relationship, I believe it's the same. You need to ask yourself, why do I want to be in a relationship? What's in it for me?
Yeah.
And if the answer is like, oh, I don't want to be lonely, well, that's a really lousy reason because you
I'd rather be lonely
more
than stuck with somebody I don't want to be with.
Because you need to feel confident within yourself before you can build successful partnerships. So, and if you need to know what's in it for you, then after you've got clarity on that, you will know what kind of relationship you would like to create. In the essence, most people go like, "Oh, I want blonde, blue eyes, whatever," and they start going into characteristics of a partner that they're looking for. I ask people, what kind of relationship you want to create? And they say, oh, he has to be this, this, and that. I'm like, no. I didn't ask you what your checklist is for your partner.
In my book, one of the exercises I talked about it last week on the program is when you're having problems, imagine what the ideal mate is for your spouse, and then how will you fit into that. But as you're saying, you also have to determine what's an ideal mate for you and how well does your spouse currently fit into that image, because obviously it's a two-way street.
Well, my invitation actually to start even before you get to describe the mate, describe a relationship, how you see that. What I mean by that is like, okay, we wake up and forget who you wake up with, just the essence of that. We wake up every day and we smile to each other, we cuddle and we hug, or we always go to sleep at the same time, or we share a lot of interests together and we go on adventure, and our love life is really passionate, we can't keep our hands off each other, you know.
Yeah.
We're elegant in public. Like, describe all that you want in the essence, and then ask yourself, all right, for me to experience this, who this person needs to be in order to fit into this picture, and then you describe your partner, and then you say, well, who do I have to be?
Yeah.
And the trick is always, unless you do very serious self-assessment before you get into a new relationship, chances are you're going to recreate what you have experienced in the past.
Yeah, that's very true. And I love how you say in your book, without direction and clear intent, a chaotic outcome is inevitable. And also how you state, first build your own foundation before you start building the house, which makes a lot of sense to me as well. Well, your book appears oriented towards those entering into or seeking out a new romantic relationship. What about those of us in an established marriage that has its ups and downs? Will the suggestions in your book help to restore the warmth and passion in our established marriages? Do you recommend Best Thing Ever for long married couples?
Absolutely, yes. So in my view, we create our relationship every day anew. And because even if you have been married for like 25 years, your marriage is not the same today as it was when you just met, and it's not going to be the same tomorrow. So right now you have an opportunity to create what you want. And I would invite all listeners who are in a long-term relationship to really reassess, do self-assessments, because it's your relationship and your life, and take charge of it and see, is that what I really want? And if it's not, in some ways, just write down that vision of what is it that I want and how I want my relationships to be. And then see if and then invite your partner to co-create with you and say, hey, you know, we've shared so many wonderful years together, and I, in the next chapters of our co-creation, I would like to experience this. Are you up for something like that?
Yeah, it's so pointless to argue about going and recapturing the past, because really, obviously, like you say, you're changing every day, and your partner's changing every day, and you can't go back and recapture what you were at 25 if you're 55 or whatever. But you certainly can have a fulfilled life going forward.
Absolutely. And see what brought you together with this person in the first place. To see, what did I like about you? What did I admire about you? Throughout all of these years that we've been together, what have been some of the special things that you brought into the table that I absolutely appreciate? And see if, you know, where we want to go from here. And in many cases, your partner will jump on board and you will create something even more beautiful. In some cases, it may turn out that your partner doesn't want to play with you like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and that's your choice whether you want to really be in a situation where your partner is not cooperative, or you're willing to pull on your courage and
That's really the saddest, when one of the partners is not confident enough, or is not really in a position where they feel good about themselves and wants to cling on to another partner that really doesn't want to continue in the relationship. That's a sure prescription for disaster, I think, and is really sad. Well, how best can somebody obtain your book? Is it available in bookstores, or where do they go to get
it? It is available on Amazon. It is available in bookstores worldwide. So, and it's called Best Thing Ever: Escape Disappointment Syndrome and Let True Love Into Your Life. And the website is bestthingever.com. And actually, I have a gift for your audience. How about that?
Great. And they can get that gift by going to bestthingever.com.
No. They need to email me, because it's a special gift for your audience, which I'm not offering to anybody. So if you guys have a special question about your relationships, or you need some clarity, I want to offer you complimentary 30-minute one-on-one over-the-phone session with me. Where I can offer you insights and direction just to get clarity within yourself. And you can get that by emailing at contact@bestthingever.com, and in the subject line put Roy Richards, because that's going to be your ticket to a free
free
consultation
great.
With me.
I love what one reviewer said on Amazon.com in your book. It said, Sky Blossom lays out actionable steps for attracting love into your life, and she does not get caught up in theory or complex concepts. Instead, her book has succinct and doable tips on attracting love. And this is precisely the nature of resource that we like to recommend to you, the listener. It's the same strategy I adopted in writing my book on middle-age renewal, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. It's a practical roadmap to get you from where you are today to your well-thought-out destination, where you want to be, and it takes you there step by step. And those are the kind of books that I love. And as Sky mentioned, she also offers one-on-one relationship coaching, and you have a chance to get that for free. By what's that?
They need to send an email to contact@bestthingever.com. roy.richards.com, and just put in the subject line Roy Richards and just say, hey, I heard you on the radio show. You promised a free session. I want to take you up on that, and my assistant will get back to you and schedule something.
That's great. Well, to conclude our program, I'd like to quote one more phrase from Skye's book that kind of sums it all up. She says, when you were in love, you were not in love with a particular person. You were in love with life itself and every part of it. And, you know, that's so true, because I can't see how you can genuinely give love to another person unless you are confident, content, and joyful and at peace in your own life, in your own skin. And otherwise, what we mistakenly define as love instead is a behavior that's fueled by probably fear, insecurity, dependency, and jealousy. And those are four of the things that Skye says we often mistake for love. And thank you so much, Skye Blossoms, for this most informative interview. And best of success in sale of your new book, Best Thing Ever. And I'd strongly urge you listeners to check out her website and also take advantage of that free offer.
Roy, thank you so much. It was such a joy to be here, and I admire what you do, and I admire your courage and stepping up and taking charge and inspiring others. And thank you for including me into your wonderful mission. I'm honored.
Well, discover, all you people out there, discover how wrong you've been about what love is and how great your marriage can become once both of you quit trying so hard to compromise, decide what each of you really want, and move toward a marriage based on devotion rather than commitment, which is what another thing that Skye recommends in her book, and I think that's so crucial. And thank you so much, Skye, for being with us today, and so long, all of you, for now. It's the beginning of summer, and that's a great time for new beginnings. Perhaps you are 100% certain that your life today is not all that you wish it to be, yet you remain reluctant to search for something better. So what's your excuse? Here are a few that I've heard recently. Excuse number one, I'm too busy right now. That's a common one, isn't it? Well, pray tell, what's more important than improving your life, your daily living? If you're not fully satisfied with your life, you simply must set aside time for self-examination and revival. At this point, you may be far from certain that you can accomplish a definitive life plan and a consistently positive attitude, but you know that you want to try. And once you begin to make progress, you will find yourself eager to allocate whatever time and energy is necessary to complete your renewal adventure. Each week, see if you can't schedule some specific blocks of time committed to personal reflection, inspirational reading, and self-help exercises. Go about and inform spouse and family members of your renewal schedule in advance. And don't become disheartened over an occasional lapse, but always reschedule a missed session so that you, as you would any other important engagement. And obviously, you have to keep at it and never permit too much time to lapse between renewal sessions, or you will lose momentum. Excuse number two that I've heard oftentimes is, I just don't have the money. You know, contrary to the common lament, I simply don't have the financial resources to transform my life. You don't need to be wealthy to radically improve personal circumstances and emotions. As a first step, please confirm to yourself that your fulfillment as a balanced, well-rounded adult is your goal and not simply a successful career makeover. Any who fail to balance career with other potential or essential elements of daily living most likely will continue to come up short. No matter how desperate you are to try something new, I urge you not to quit your job just yet. In fact, you may be able to remain right where you are with a radically altered positive expectations and a fresh take charge attitude. In contrast, you may decide that you want to try something radically different. Always remember, those who are good at their job and who genuinely enjoy the tasks they perform each day, 9 times out of 10 will excel financially over the long haul. Here's excuse number three. Life will change someday when. The famous word when. My life will change when is probably the most self-destructive of all procrastination excuses, Because the wind seldom, if ever, arrives, and if it does, it more than likely will be replaced by a new wind. Tragically for millions nearing life's end, the wind turns into a regrettable, if only I had done this or that when I was younger. The bottom line is deceptively simple. You must never pin hopes and dreams of a better tomorrow upon unrealistic, poorly defined assumptions, or depend solely upon fate or another's initiative or kind-heartedness to accomplish your objectives. The only dreams worth having are the ones you can make realistic plans to accomplish and then get out and begin to act on these plans. You can't simply long for a better tomorrow. First, define, then visualize precisely that tomorrow in vivid detail, and follow up by charting a clear and certain course to your intended destination, a life plan, so to speak. The course may need to be altered from time to time in response to changing circumstances, but your quintessential life objectives need never change. Here's excuse number four. What good would renewal do for little old me anyway? Have you ever told yourself, given my present modest circumstances and the negative people all around me, what hope do I have of possibly transforming my life? It is indeed very difficult to renew alone when routinely exposed to negative reaction, and you hear negative comments all the time from your spouse, your husband or wife, family members, the teenagers especially, friends and co-workers at work. How many gossip sessions do you run across at work? I know I used to hear a lot of those. As a start, I ask only that you have faith. Faith, that is, more often than not, those with a positively renewed attitude are able to bring significant others along slowly but surely. Renewed individuals better understand the motives and emotions of self, I know I sure do, than I used to, and others, and we can condition ourselves to avoid confrontation. As the old saying goes, it takes two to tango. As a renewed person, you simply can decline to second negative commentary or to engage in mean-spirited criticism or gossip. A frequent smile, sincere attention to others, warm comments about other people, and pointing out their favorable characteristics and positive emotions are highly contagious. Ultimately, you may decide to terminate certain negative or abusive relationships, and I know you can't ditch your teenagers or fire your boss at work, but you must never let a difficult relationship force postponement of your long overdue self-examination. Painful relationships are not likely, after all, to improve unless you first begin to positively transform your own inner thoughts and emotions. No, you can't control how other people act or external circumstances will be what they are, but you can always transform your inner thoughts and emotions and how you will react to something negative or positive outside. Excuse number five, and I love this one, God will change me if it's God's will. And I urge every person of faith to consult with God through prayer and listen intently for God's response. Venture forward with God, but please do not sit back and wait for God to do all the work, like the guy that prayed for a lottery ticket win but never went out to buy a lottery ticket. While I greatly admire individuals whose unbending faith permits them to place themselves totally in God's hands, I cannot imagine that the Supreme Being wants any of us to sit around meekly awaiting for circumstances to get better without trying to make them better on their own. I firmly believe that God will help you instill a positive mental attitude if you strive diligently for peace of mind and strength within. It is not God's will, after all, that you progress through life unfulfilled, unproductive, and unhappy. He doesn't want that for anybody. A reawakened spirit will not guarantee uninterrupted joy, serenity, and prosperity. We all know that, but it does guarantee an unwavering abundance of inner strength when you unite your strength with the strength of God and the universal intelligence. We cannot always change circumstances, but we always can change how we react. And then there's excuse number 6, if only. And we leave it at there. The if only excuse uses an irreversible mistake from the past. I quit school is a good example, or something like that. Fate, I was born ugly, and I'm not talking about you. how about external circumstances? I married the wrong person. I hope my spouse doesn't hear that. Or someone else's fault. My parents never taught me how to make money and how to use it. And then they use the excuse or the other person's fault as a permanent excuse for not taking control and moving forward. Through some kind of twisted reasoning, you somehow hold yourself less accountable for self-defined shortcomings and less envious of another's success if you can point the finger elsewhere or manufacture a built-in excuse. But when you think about it, this never makes things any better now or in the future, does it? It may be an excuse to be miserable, but it doesn't make you any less miserable. And the if-only excuse, purely and simply, is a silly rationalization for doing nothing. And in the extreme, it's a certain formula for reaching journeys end miserable and unfulfilled. In truth, the if-only excuse and its close relative, I'm not good enough, reflect deep within self-defined personal limitations which may have been implanted in our subconscious minds when we were small children. And I know I had a number of those negative type of limitations implanted in my mind, and it took me 30 years to overcome some of them. But by golly, I think I've overcome most of them now. And these self-imposed limitations simply must be recognized. First, they must be recognized for what they are, and we've had several programs where we've talked about that. And then you can work on purging them once you recognize that you're limiting yourself and why you're limiting yourself, and get that little pig, as we once called it, out of your, that's the self-imposed limitations, out of your brain and where it belongs in the trash. And without question, you deserve lasting fulfillment on your very own terms, and you possess within untapped talents and capabilities that are almost beyond imagination. All of us do, and it is your essential task to bring them out. Excuse number 7 is kind of related. I'm just a little person. You've probably heard that one. Many of us sadly envision a world where only a fortunate few, like the Donald Trumps of the world or the Hillary Clintons, have the capability to alter circumstances or control personal destiny, and the rest of us must rely wholly upon the goodwill of others or movers and shakers, the system, or fate somehow will apportion our minute share of the world's limited supply of wealth, prestige, and personal fulfillment. Joy is really the key ingredient there. Please refuse absolutely to limit your aspirations for life on a higher plane. You need not amass great wealth or fame to assume primary control over your personal emotions and to gain wholehearted respect within your particular corner of the world. Always remember, life is not a zero-sum game. Without question, you can be a big person to your spouse and children, your close friends and neighbors, people in your community, customers, and business associates. But first, you must fully accept yourself and then consistently interact with others with genuine compassion, respect, and concern, so that you're interested in their welfare just as you want them to be interested in yours. Excuse number 8, and this is one that we all have to encounter from time to time, the world is just too scary right now. Do you remember where and when and precisely what you were doing on September 11, 2001? How about that awful fall of 2008 when the stock market kept crashing lower and lower? Boy, I can remember that like it was yesterday. Is it possible to achieve and sustain a positive outlook on life when the world has become such a scary place? You think you're going to end up with no money because your investments have been cut in half, or you see the World Trade Center, the tallest building in one of the tallest buildings in America suddenly sink down into an abyss. In fact, the ever-present threat of terrorism or economic upheaval makes it even more essential that you and I seek to revive our own positive emotions. As you begin to positively transform your outlook on life, you become more and more capable of challenging the future, whether it's positive or negative external circumstances, because of a strong inner compass. Over time, you will develop an inherent capacity to stand up on your own two feet, even to the most challenging circumstances. You ever notice how after a tornado or a flood, a hurricane, a natural disaster, some people manage to prosper and regain their equanimity and move forward, while others seem lost and really don't get anywhere for many years, if ever, in the rest of their lives? As we begin to possibly transform life, we become more and more capable of challenging the future. Not one of us alone has the power to change the world, but each one of us can possibly influence our little corner of it. Why not be the person who helps lead out of a disaster or a short-term abyss to something better? As we seek to revive favorable emotions and expectations, we risk absolutely nothing except the loss of a perpetual built-in excuse for beginning and ending each day on a sour note. And excuse number 9 is one I know all too well. It hurts too much. Have you recently lost a loved one, family member, or a cherished life companion? I certainly can sympathize with that, because my wife and I lost our daughter Kristen to a plane crash on the last day of 2006. And I do not for a moment suggest that in the initial stages of grief that you attempt a radical midlife transformation. At best, I offer only the gentle suggestion that a timely shift in focus from unbridled grief to a tentative game plan for sustainable recovery and for planning out the next stage of your life may help shorten your period of extreme emotional distress. In hindsight, you may discover that recovery from a life-altering traumatic loss proves an ideal point in time to initiate personal renewal, because unlike other procrastinators, those suffering from severe personal loss do not have the option of turning back or of clinging to the present, because like circumstances can never change to the way they were before, a person in bereavement has only two logical choices: move forward to build a positive future, or remain forever lost in a bittersweet but hopeless remembrance of the past. Unless you are willing to take control in your life this very day, the obstacles you face today undoubtedly will remain in your life tomorrow. And when you think about it, the ultimate insanity is to continue pursuit of a career, relationships, or a lifestyle which clearly is not working for you and is not making you joyful and productive today. Before you conclude that the present is a bad time for personal renewal, please remind yourself over and over that you will never know what good things lie in your future unless you try to uncover them. Do not be like the old hound dog lying on a farm porch here in Iowa. Every so often, without moving, the old dog would raise its head and let out a mournful howl. And when a visitor asked the farmer who owned the dog what was wrong, the farmer answered that the old hound was lying on a protruding nail on the porch, but it simply did not hurt enough to inspire the dog to move. Please don't wait for an immediate life crisis like a divorce, job loss, serious illness, or death of a loved one to examine your options. Unlike that foolish old dog, you don't need to sit around and accept every protruding nail or tack in your life today. Get up off your uncomfortable spot on life's porch and begin your diligent search for a more accommodating location. And to learn more about midlife renewal and how you can accomplish it, including a discussion of all the excuses, common excuses that people make for not renewing their lives, I suggest you preview my first book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. Heck, I waited 30-plus years to renew my life and missed out on so much. As I look back now, I could have done so much more with my life, but there's no point in looking at the past because that really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is today and tomorrow. Don't delay. You owe it to yourself to move to a more comfortable, joyful location on life's porch. And whatever your excuse, it's time to get up and search for something better. And believe me, it will be well worth your effort. Once again, my book is A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and you can preview it at www.middleagerenewal.com, or you can find it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And that's our program for today. Tune in next week when we'll talk about coping with your teenagers. Now let's all go out and prove that, as we often always say on this program, middle age can be your best age. So long.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.